A Tuesday afternoon edition, which means, of course, John Najarian's right around the corner. We'll check in with him to see what's going up on Wall Street. Actually, I want to ask him about a few things that are going down on Wall Street today. Suzanne Muchin, a little bit later in the program, we'll talk about issues of gender in the workplace. And good golly, it's another day. A lot more to talk about there. We always start with John Najarian. You can follow him on Twitter at John Najarian, and certainly see him on CNBC as well, usually right before this program. And he joins us on Tuesdays to get a view of Wall Street. John, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Stephen, great to be back with you. Thank you very much.
Let's start with this Goldman Sachs. Everything's so wrapped up in tax reform. Everything's so connected, right? But Goldman comes out with a prediction or forecast, I should say, for next year. Says the S&P 500 will be up 10.4% if there's tax reform, and down, what, about 5% if there is not. Is that sort of what you expected? Were you surprised by any of that?
Not surprised at all. I'm fully on board with that prediction. I think the likelihood that the market would react negatively to a further delay, they already have priced in more or less now, Stephen,
right. That
fact that these tax cuts for corporations wouldn't kick in, at least if the Senate bill wins out, wouldn't kick in until 2019. So I think the if you dismissed the tax revamp altogether, I think, yeah, anywhere from 5 to 6% to the downside.
I'm torn, John, because God knows I am tired of talking about sexual harassers and molesters and all of that. But it just keeps coming as well. And it occurred to me, you know, we're talking about media companies being impacted, politicians. We haven't seen a lot. Well, I guess Weinstein. But when it comes to business leaders just yet, and I wonder if you've seen any fallout from all of this when it comes to publicly traded companies yet, or maybe there's still that to come.
Well, you are, as usual, prophetic, because I think you're probably right. There probably is some of that, unfortunately. I doubt if it's just in Hollywood and or on media outlets. So, unfortunately, as well as, of course, our elected officials now. But I think we'll probably have a spat of them hitting us over the next several weeks and months.
Yeah.
But we haven't. One of us are enjoying that.
No, and we haven't had too much of it just yet, really, have we, in the business world?
No.
I mean, you know, I guess we have in Silicon Valley and all of that, but not in this most recent sort of assault.
Right. And it was mainly, I guess, more of a, what did they call it, a dude culture or whatever.
Right.
Tesla and so forth that you're referring to. But, you know, there's obviously, as a guy with daughters and so forth, I would like to think that they have every opportunity to do as well as their male counterparts without having to endure that.
Right.
And nobody supports that, obviously.
I got a little girl finishing up her college in just a month, so I'm certainly with you on that. Hey, I love going shopping on Black Friday. I know it's kind of crazy, but it's just one of the things I'd like to do. It's a tradition. Am I going to have to go buy DSW shoes to keep them afloat?
You might have to.
What's going on there?
These numbers were pretty horrible, and they weren't as bad as another one. DSW shares traded down 12%, and it's still above the 52-week low, trading at about 1960. But take a look at a stock, Signet Jewelers.
Oh, SIG. Yeah, right.
It's down 27%. So obviously some of these stores have really been Amazoned because obviously Amazon owns Zappos, which is shoes in the case of your DRW example, or DSW rather, and mine, the one I brought up, Signet, has competition from not just Walmart, but Amazon as well. So I think these are companies that just haven't done enough in that space to compete with the online competition. And that's unfortunate, but it's probably going to create some great sales, by the way.
We've talked about the hurricanes and the impact on all of that, and the fact that Lowe's now had pretty good numbers when it comes to the third quarter, and yet they're kind of taking a bath on Wall Street today as well, aren't they still?
Yeah, they are. And a lot of Wall Street analysts and just customers would tell you that they're not organized as well as Home Depot, and thus more difficult for people to find what they went in there for in the first place. They might get frustrated. Although it's not been a gangbuster year, it's not been horrible either. They're up almost 15% from the beginning of the year. So even though they're not hitting it as hard as Home Depot is, still not a bad company.
One more then. We're talking about earnings reports and all of that. Medtronic came out with numbers, and they are on the positive side today.
Yeah, very positive. Medtronic, I think my brother Pete talks about them all the time because of the growth. They have significant growth that they offer investors, and anybody that is delivering on that promise of growth is going to be rewarded for it, and Medtronic certainly right up there and being rewarded for that today.
All right, Dow's up about 179. What are you playing today?
Okay, let's see. Today we were taking a look at TripAdvisor. Not just taking a look, we took a trip on it. We bought some. The stock is down hard because the last quarter was just horrific, and now there are some takeover rumors swirling again. Stock's back down to $30. It's popped to 32 today. We're in there. We probably would exit in the mid-30s if it gets there in the short term. But I like the company. I think they do a great job, and I like their website.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at a place that we're going to visit in Mexico, I think, early next year. And I was on TripAdvisor getting the details. So, hey, listen, have a great holiday, John Najarian. I'll be thinking of you. You're certainly one of the things I'm thankful for when it comes to the show.
So likewise.
We'll talk again soon.
For you and your audience. Thank you, Stephen.
You
have
bet.
A great one.
You too. All right. Is your turkey thawed? Probably, what is it, Tuesday? Maybe it should be thawed by now. I don't know. We're going to talk a little bit about food safety and the problems involved with that. 46,000, make that 46 million turkeys will be cooked on this holiday. And you know what? Two or three of them are going to go bad. Let's make sure they're not yours. On a phone line, Tanya Brown. She's a food safety expert at USDA. Tanya, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, come on, really. What are the chances that I'm going to get sick at my Thanksgiving meal? They're pretty slim, aren't they?
No, there's a very high chance that you could if you don't handle and cook that bird properly. You know, 48 million Americans each year suffer from foodborne illness. 128,000 are hospitalized, and 3,000 actually lose their lives due to foodborne illness. So it's very important that you know how to properly handle and not spread bacteria onto your family and your friends, especially this holiday season.
One of the things I was reading, and this kind of came as a surprise. Well, first of all, should you wash your turkey?
No, you should not wash your turkey. I know it's something that people are generally used to because they've seen their parents do it, their grandparents do it, but we don't recommend it because all washing the turkey does is spread bacteria around your sink, around your countertops, and it contaminates other parts of your kitchen. The bird is already clean, so all you really need to do is take the paper off, season it, and put it in the oven. The only exception to that rule is if you brine your turkey. You do need to wash that brine off. So we recommend that you use a low stream of water and also place paper towels around your countertops to catch any splashing.
So why would you need to wash the brine off? Just because it could be contaminated or for the flavor of the cooking?
Oh, for the flavor, because it's salty. Your brine is
generally
a mixture with aromatics, correct.
So if you put that in the sink, just make sure you wash it gently so it's not splashing all over the place.
Exactly. And then you can wash your sink and your countertops off with a bleach solution once you're finished.
What is the biggest mistake people, like how about stuffing your turkey before the night before? Save a little money. Does that work or a little time?
You know, that's an excellent question. Do not stuff the turkey before the day before. You only want to stuff your turkey right before you put it in the oven. And to be honest, we don't even recommend stuffing the turkey at all. And the reason is oftentimes that pop-up thermometer will come up and say the bird is done, but the stuffing inside may not be done. And so you may have salmonella that has leached into that stuffing.
Oh.
And because people don't use a food thermometer, exactly, because people don't use a food thermometer and test the stuffing to make sure that that's at 165 degrees as well as the bird at 165 degrees, then people can get sick.
You know,
that's why we generally don't recommend it.
I'm sorry, I actually had not thought of that because, right, there's nothing in the dressing that's going to go bad or the stuffing. But if you've got sort of contamination from the turkey and it didn't get hot enough, then you're going to get just as sick. I really hadn't thought of that before.
Exactly.
Okay, and so is it just the turkey or are there other things we should be concerned about? How about the can of cranberries? I avoid that for all other reasons. It's not a health risk to me, is it?
No, it's not. The only health risk is if you do have raw meats and poultry that come in contact with those other things. You just want to be mindful that you keep everything separate and that there's no cross-contamination. So after you mess with that turkey and you clean it and you put your ingredients all over it, make sure you constantly wash your hands after you touch raw meat before you go and touch other things like that cranberry sauce or
I just told you, Tanya, I'm not going to touch the cranberry sauce, so that's fine.
Before you touch other vegetables.
You know what? Chances are I'm not going to touch vegetables either. Just the gravy and the meat. That's all I'm worried about.
That's all you need, right?
Seriously, though, is Thanksgiving tops when it comes to holidays with people getting sick from food, or is it just sort of when we focus on it more?
It's kind of when we focus on it all the time, but because Thanksgiving is one of the largest meals that most people are going to cook throughout the year, we really want to pay attention to it because this is where mistakes can happen.
And you also have a lot of people cooking who don't usually cook, too.
Exactly. And sometimes it's their first time and they want to tackle this event and say, I'm going to cook this Thanksgiving dinner. And that's where things start falling apart. Right, so that's why we just have food safety.
Tanya Braun, where are you celebrating? What's your Thanksgiving going to look like?
Mine is going to be quiet at home with friends and a very small gathering of friends and family.
Well, I hope you have a great time. And don't listen to me now. Don't wash your turkey.
I will not wash my turkey.
Tanya Braun is a safety expert at USDA. Have a great holiday. Thanks for joining us today.
You too. Thank you so much.
It's a Tuesday, and that means Suzanne Muchin, the co-host of The Big Payoff at WGNRadio.com and elsewhere, will be in the studio to talk about issues of, well, how do we say this? Sometimes I say women's issues. Sometimes I say issues of gender in the workplace.
Women in business, women in the workplace. What an interesting time to have this segment.
And I said earlier, I would imagine listeners are tired of hearing about it. I'm tired of talking about it. But it just keeps going, with Charlie Rose now being formally fired by CBS. John Conyers, an AP reporter, went to his door today and he said, none of it is true. I was interested. Ruth Marcus wrote a column in the Washington Post, and she talks about, she had a phrase about revolution. Let me find it here. Yet a perplexing aspect of the current debate involves the question of what should happen to those guilty of misbehavior and the tendency common to revolutions to overcorrect the past sins. And I thought of it that is what happens. We get this new fervor and maybe overpunish sometimes. So the idea now is to try to find a just equilibrium to either correct behavior or to punish behavior.
We're at a moment where I think the question has to be asked, is all behavior equal? I mean, there's a talking point, and I've heard it too many times to think it's not like a standard talking point somebody's right. been given, where the talking point right now is not every crime merits the death penalty.
Which is true.
And so what's hard right now is that we're in a moment in which every story is sort of shock jock.
Well, you have to say that even though it doesn't deserve the death penalty, doesn't mean it deserves to be overlooked.
Absolutely. Right. And there's still stories. I mean, we can say that we're sick of hearing it, but I think when Charlie Rose comes up yesterday.
Iconic.
It's iconic. And I think we do wake up in the morning wondering who's going down next. The thing I worry about is are we going to actually get so burned out on this story that it loses the meaning behind it.
Let me tell you, we're doing crosstalk, and Bill and Wendy were making Charlie Rose jokes.
Too soon?
I don't know. And I pointed out to them, not that they shouldn't have been, but it's kind of an interesting where we are now. Yeah. Like, I don't know that there were Harvey Weinstein
jokes. I don't know. Well, that's why Trump's tweet was so disgusting about the Al Franken. It's like, really, we're going to start to make a joke out of this now? Forget whether you agree or disagree. I'm just saying we're not yet ready to treat this lightly.
Okay, so what's the Lena Dunham thing? I start reading about Lena Dunham and I just have to stop.
So she's a tricky character because she's inherently controversial. But she did something that also occurred with the women of SNL. 36 of them, just like Lena Dunham and her coworkers, came out in support of a man who had been accused. In the case of Lena Dunham, it was a writer on Girls. And in the case of SNL, it was for Al Franken.
And again, we're conflating two very different events, right? The writer, the Lena Dunham connect, was
accused of rape.
Right.
But absolutely. The thing that's similar is they both came out and said, look, we know these men. We've worked with them extensively. We can provide some context here that paints a slightly different picture. in both cases, massive backlash from women.
Dunham is losing money, right? There are advertisers pulling from her company?
Yes, Dunham, yes.
And so she's speaking what she thinks is her truth.
She's speaking her truth, and this is the question that you were asking earlier, which is, where are we? Are we yet ready for women to defend men of any kind? I mean, there was a fantastic article in The Atlantic about Bill Clinton that raised the op-ed that I completely forgot about, where in 1995, Gloria Steinem defended him.
Right.
So where are we? Are we ready for women to come out in support of men? And that talking point, which is valid, is, are all crimes equal?
And so the women of Second City, of Saturday
of
Night
SNL
Live,
came out and said, look, we're just letting you know we have all worked with Franken over a long period of time. None of us had, we don't condone what he did, and it looked like very bad behavior. But does this mean he's a criminal? Does it mean he's predatory? Does it mean he should lose his job? They came out strongly and said no.
You know, there are death pools around. Are there harassment pools?
Did I
just make that joke?
I think you just made it a joke.
Yeah, maybe I did. Is that
too
wrong?
Too soon?
Okay.
I have to say, the day after Steve Jobs passed away, Rachel and I did a podcast and referred to him in not so nice terms.
Right.
People, it was a known thing.
Sure.
The feedback was too soon.
And that's the big payoff that you're talking about?
That's the big payoff podcast.
People can subscribe to that, right?
They can.
How do they do that?
I'm just on their iPhone, on the iPod podcast.
You know, I'm really bummed because I just love the NASCAR.
Right.
And Danica Patrick, is this my last year of watching her, not win?
I know. Well, I don't think it's your last year watching her.
Not win?
Not win. See, yeah. This is the fascinating moment that we're in, where a woman athlete, a female athlete, has broken through the glass ceiling in the most male of male, right, cultures.
Sure.
At NASCAR, and made a real brand, a name for herself as being a woman who was cool and beautiful and smart and edgy and also a driver. And yet she really wasn't, relative to the pack, a great driver.
Dave Caldwell writes a piece in Forbes about that and about how she moved from the IndyCar race to the NASCAR.
Yeah.
And he argues she would have won.
She could have done better.
She won no races?
She won no.
One or one
she
race.
She only won one race in NASCAR. And
one race in Indy. Yeah.
And he's saying had she stayed,
she would have won more in Indy.
And made more money and.
No, made less money.
Oh, right. Made less money, but made more of a name for herself,
right,
as a driver.
As a better, better athlete.
Instead,
she goes to NASCAR, doesn't ever win, but creates a great brand and goes home with tons of cash.
Tons of cash.
I'll take that trade.
Right. That's the trade-off she's made. And I think what we can ask is, are women athletes who want to break through the glass ceiling, are they making the right trade-off? Because the truth is, they are going to inevitably find themselves, perhaps, in a place where they're not winning.
Yeah, and Caldwell writes as if she's doing this or is sort of a little melancholy. There's some regret over it. But I say good for her. She did what she wanted to do. And
open the door for other women, perhaps. Very interesting.
So we'll see her at the Indy 500 and Daytona, I think.
Yeah.
Rachel. Why did I say Rachel?
Did you just call me? Oh, that's my co-host.
Yeah.
Really?
So.
Oh, she'll love that.
Suzanne Mushin is here. Listen, have a great Thanksgiving.
Thanks. You too.
I appreciate it. And people, check out the big payoff.
Thanks.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 W. Best to Rachel.
I'll let her know.
WGN. Tuesday afternoon, the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, Kelly Leonard is in the studio. He is the host of, well, you know him from ever from Second City and all of that, but the host of this podcast, Getting to Yes And, goes up on Tuesdays, right? New one is up today?
It's already up.
All right, so this in Getting to Yes And, we say this when you come on, is an improv term.
Yeah, it's an improv. You can't get anywhere by saying no. You have to say yes and. So we find cool people that we yes and with.
And the idea is being open to new things.
Yeah, totally.
Robert Lustig is the guest this time, and he's written a new book that's out, and I don't have it in front of me here.
It's called The Hacking of the American Mind.
Which is so cool. I was reading reviews of it today, and the idea is that he wrote about sugar. He's a neuroscientist.
Yeah, he's a doctor. He made a big splash because he came out hard against sugar. He compares sugar to heroin.
Really?
Yes.
So in this one, the subject is how the brain works and how capitalism aims to satisfy the brain's cravings.
Right.
Wow, that sounds like a science fiction movie. Explain that for me.
Well, we're not wearing tinfoil hats, so let's just be clear on that.
Okay.
But there's a science to it. So what he is saying is that, and I've got a great quote, so I'll just read this. He says, fear has been a primary driver of consumption since the inception of marketing. It started with car dealers and high-pressure sales tactics. Since then, virtually everything from mouthwashes to dishwashers dishwashers to Hummers to Smith & Wessons are sold out of fear, either fear of failure or fear of the unknown.
Right. And I mean, if you just step back and think about it, it's so true.
Yeah.
But the car dealers, what are we talking about? They were talking about the fear of, I can't get this deal for you.
Yeah, or? I can't get this. I'm gonna miss out on the great deal. Or, you know, you can see the fear, like in every dental product is all like attacking the germs, right?
Right.
They use all this fear language. And then look at our politicians. You know, what are we scared of? We're scared of the other who's going to take our jobs away, or someone else is coming for us, or going to take our guns away. They're all preying on our fear brain.
And there's something about us that wants to be, you know, back when I was interviewing authors all the time,
yeah.
And I don't know, maybe this is a sexist view or maybe it's not, but there was a school of thought then, it's not that long ago, that women were drawn to sort of murder mysteries because they like to be scared and then it was resolved at the end and be reassured.
Oh, that's an interesting
I don't know
thing.
How true it is. Maybe it's true for all of us. It's not a gender thing. I don't know. But but there's a point to where I think we're all sort of drawn to being scared, or we almost kind of welcome being scared.
Well, what we forget is we've been running from lions a lot longer than we've been running for the bus.
Right.
So the brain has not evolved that much, you know, if you look at modern society. So we're still the same stuff that in terms of our you know, the flight part of the brain, you know, and this is a thing that ties into improvisation, right? So in improv, it's all about getting out of your fear brain. That's what we teach people, to sort of lose that sort of self-judgment, get out of the fear brain so you can create. Because once we're in fear, we're not making good decisions.
Fear brain is in when you're on stage or
about
meeting?
Well, yeah. So we certainly, you know, use it on stage to sort of be like, you know, you have no script. You're just going to have to make this up. And if you're scared, you're not going to do that well. And what we figured out is that's transferable to everything else. And it's you see this in sports, right? When suddenly a great hitter suddenly can't hit anything, or we have a pitcher on the Cubs who can't throw to first base.
Right.
That's a fear brain thing. That's
right,
not a skill thing.
And so you got to get out of that.
Yeah.
Does Lustig tell us how to do that?
Well, Lustig is basically looking for seatbelts, right? So he says one of the problems we've got, this fear stuff has always existed in consumerism, but the problem is now the digital medium. It's being thrown at us 24 hours a day.
Before we get to that, I want to go to one more because this is a pet peeve of mine, and this speaks to my idea that we sort of take comfort in being afraid, is the phrase, have a safe holiday. What the hell does that mean? Am I at risk of, you know, being shot or killed on Thanksgiving more than the day after or 2 days before? The idea this we now wish each other a celebration by saying be safe,
right,
is just, it's bizarre to me.
Well, it's kind of priming for the negative. It's making you think of something negative. And the reality is that the planet has never been safer. Right now,
the city has never been safer.
It's never been safer. And, you know, all this stuff that they're talking to us about, you know, the sort of immigration problems and the crime and all, it's all down. It's not up.
Right.
And Lustig talks about that.
Tell me, what does he say?
He is basically saying that marketing and government are using propaganda tactics to get you to buy things and to vote a certain way.
Okay. Well, I guess I was going to ask you, I get the buying things, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, would a positive message not work? There must be positive messages out there, too.
I think a positive message can work. It's just that, you know, that,
buy
that's
this
not...
detergent, your clothes will look great before you're killed?
Yeah. Yeah. I think what he talks about the difference between pleasure and happiness, and that most people really want happiness, but we're being sold pleasure. And this is talks about dopamine and different aspects they're going. It's very technical inside the book, but it's important because you realize that we are mistaking pleasure for happiness and vice versa.
All right. Speaking of that, then maybe we think that it's happiness to be in our room. I sit now and watch TV with headphones on.
Yeah.
My wife is in another room and she's like, why don't we watch something together? I'm like, because I want to watch this show right now. And I'm completely closed off.
Right.
And he addresses that.
He does. One of the things he points out is that isolation is a real danger for us. And one of the statistics, which is interesting, is that married couples live longer.
Yeah.
And so they're
well,
not...
I wonder if that will change if they don't spend any time together.
If you suddenly each of you have headphones on,
yeah.
I mean, that's a study we should run, or maybe not.
The name of the book is The Hacking of the American Mind. Dr. Robert Lustig is Kelly Leonard's guest, and the name of the podcast is Getting to Yes And. It's up now. Check it out. I'm excited about this.
Yeah, it's cool.
When I was reading about Lustig and the different things he said, I'm like, man, this makes – I think I – said to you in a text that I'm guilty on all four talking points.
Absolutely. And we talk a lot about politics, too.
All right. We'll check it out. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks.
Have a great Thanksgiving.
You have a good Thanksgiving, too.